Okay, so if everything you're saying is true, I'm going to invest $50,000 or something with you, and you're going to deliver the same returns I'm getting today on my smaller multifamily, potentially even better, and I don't have to lift a finger. And he's like, "Yeah, that's pretty much it." And I did take that leap of faith and made my first investment with him.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Steve Breton. How are you doing today, Steve?
Doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. Thank you for being here. Steve is the founder of Velocity Capital. He began investing in real estate in 2012 and now has over 1,300 apartment units under management. His real estate experience includes flips, ground-up development, and private lending, but his passion is really helping others invest in large multifamily properties. So, Steve, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. Could you tell the listeners just a little bit more about your background and how you got started in real estate?
Yeah. So my background, like so many others, went straight into the W-2 job out of college, had studied business and computer science and did have a bit of a passion for it. I really liked it, enjoyed it for many years. But about 20 years in, my company was bought out, you know, management changes, you know, all kinds of things happened. It was shortly after 2008. So it's just, you know, a lot of thoughts about, will I ever be able to retire, or do I really even enjoy what I'm doing? And can I imagine doing this forever? So the answer was no to so many things. I said, okay, I have to make a change here. So I bought my first duplex thinking, okay, I'm going to stack a bunch of these cash flowing duplexes and eventually be able to leave my job because I'll have all this passive income. But realized I couldn't really stack that many of them in the Boston area where I'm from. It's expensive with self-managing in order to make it work. And then once I got 16 units, I decided, okay, this is not the answer to be a landlord and to also have the hour commute to work and all of those things. So I finally started investing passively in syndicated properties with larger players and eventually became a sponsor.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's awesome. It's so funny. It's a similar story. I started in Philadelphia with a duplex and we got up to about 16 units and then just made a lot of sense to start doing larger and larger deals.
Right.
So let's talk about, I'd love to talk a little bit about how you transition into investing passively with other operators. How did you learn about syndications? How did you go about choosing the sponsors that you worked with?
Yeah, so that was, it was interesting because I was asking a local real estate investor, you know, do you know anybody else who invests in real estate? I feel like I'm doing something wrong here. Like, how do people get to 40 units while they're still working? One of the things I learned was, you know, if you're investing in a different market, you can afford a property management company. It's a lot easier to get, you know, to scale that up. But you know, this person said, I kind of went along the same path, but I also have these passive investments. And he just, you know, introduced me to a friend of his and had a conversation. And I'm like, okay, so if everything you're saying is true, I'm going to invest $50,000 or something with you, and you're going to deliver the same returns I'm getting today on my smaller multifamily, potentially even better. And I don't have to lift a finger. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty much it. And it sounds too good to be true. But I did take that leap of faith and made my first investment with him. Went very well, made a couple more. And I can't remember how I was introduced to another person. You know, I guess I was just talking about it a bit. And the more you speak about something, the more people will come to you and be like, hey, I heard you were doing XYZ. I also do that. So, you know, eventually met a bunch of different people. And the next thing I knew, I had about 20 of these investments made over the course of a few years. And some of them were cashing out. And I was getting that big payoff at the end, just like they promised. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. At that point, I started selling off everything that I owned locally.
Okay. Nice. That's amazing. And did you kind of trust the sponsors that you were working with to choose the markets that they were in? Or was that a factor in your decisions as well?
Yeah, the first couple were working here in Boston and they were doing up like ground up development and some other things, you know, or they were building it, then renting it. But they were well connected within the market here and they were able to make a profit better than I could because I wasn't as connected. But then, yeah, the others that I was introduced to, you know, they were out of Texas or Atlanta, you know, they were in really good cash flow markets. I had done a little bit of research, but they were telling me, like, here's why I invest in this market. And it made sense, right? Population growth, job growth, higher demand for the apartments, and there's not enough being built, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I researched it, I believed it. I said, okay, this is a good business model, and I was comfortable with it.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. So you started doing smaller multifamily yourself. You fell into the syndication world and were investing with other sponsors. What made you want to go about it yourself and become active again and become a syndicator yourself?
Partly I missed some of the hands-on. As I mentioned, I sold some of my properties and continued to invest passively with those funds. But I missed being hands-on a bit. I also was thinking, this doesn't seem that difficult, right? The more I talked to these sponsors, the more I educated myself over that three-year period. So eventually I said, well, let me go to a conference and just see what they're talking about, how these things work, meet some more sponsors. And then I went to a couple of education seminars and just started to really understand it all. And I was like, I can definitely do this, that I'm a, you know, brilliant guy or anything, but it's not that difficult once you learn everything that you need to learn. So I took the chance on spending the money on education. I hired a coach and I figured out how to do it. And I felt like I had the right person kind of looking over my shoulder to make sure I did it right. But the other thing that came up was, even when I was investing in the smaller multifamily or as a passive investor, I was telling friends and family, like, hey, you should do this, right? This is a good path for you. And a lot of them just didn't either have the courage to do it themselves or the time to do it themselves. They just had money. And so they always asked, you know, well, can I invest with you? And my answer was always no when I was buying the smaller multifamily. Not into the passive multifamily investments. I would just introduce them to the operators. I'd say, hey, you know, here's my friend. He wants to invest. Like, and then they would jump in. So I had nothing to gain from that. So all I was trying to do was just help people around me. And when I came about, when I actually did my first deal, those same people, right? So maybe a dozen people were my first investors because they were already kind of conditioned to want to invest in these things. Totally, you know, kind of serendipity. I didn't plan any of this out, but worked out really well. And those folks still invest with me today.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're going to conferences, you're surrounding yourself with the right people. You said you hired a coach. Was there one thing out of all the things that you were doing to kind of self-educate and surround yourself with the right people? What was the one thing that kind of gave you the most confidence and you know, skills needed to move forward with that first syndication?
I would say it was probably underwriting. Like, you know, I thought I understood the numbers, but I was always afraid of, you know, they're big numbers, right? You're buying properties that are multi-million dollars. You're taking investment from friends and family, and you know, they're putting their hard-earned dollars to work with you, but that means they trust you. And my biggest fear was, you know, losing sleep, always worried, and then potentially this thing not even working out. But once I really was coached properly and I did all the research and practiced the underwriting quite a bit, I felt like I was probably not going to make a mistake. And even if I made a small mistake or the business plan went a little bit sideways, I was in the right markets. I had the right coach or other people, you know, surrounding me that could help me to navigate those waters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And what did that first deal look like? What was the kind of unit count and deal size?
That was 130 units in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay, awesome.
And it was a heavy value add. There was lots of renovations to do, and they had combined some units, and we uncombined them, you know, break them back up to individual units. So, you know, tons of value add, definitely some more risk at play there, but the returns were amazing. We sold that one recently.
Okay, great. So you scaled pretty quickly. I mean, according to your website, you're over 1,300 units right now, maybe more at this point. But how did you, you know, after that first deal was done, how did you accomplish that momentum to acquire so many units in such a short time?
Yeah, it was. It's funny you say that because I'm surrounded with people now who, you know, have these goals like I'm going to buy 1,000 units this year.
Sure.
So yeah, I did that over the course of 3.5 years or so. So you know, it was like a couple of deals a year, and one of them was a massive deal that I, you know, one of my early deals was 360 units, and it was with a much larger sponsor. And again, you know, part of my learning process was partnering up with people that I met at these conferences that I really liked and got to know and trusted, and just seeing how they run their business and watching them do the underwriting, do that underwriting with them, go on site, do all the due diligence with them. and eventually invest with them and bring some of my friends and family into those deals together and then watch the entire process. But now I'm watching it from a general partner's perspective, right? Really getting a look under the covers of seeing, you know, how do they operate the property itself? How do they deal with the property management company? How do they negotiate contracts? You know, all those things, again, I thought I knew how to do, and I did a lot of it in my business life as well, in my job, but it's like that not knowing what you don't know. So getting a much larger property under contract and really seeing it all with somebody who's super experienced is, you know, to me was one of the best ways to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So would you say out of, you know, there's so many different kind of niches in this business, whether it's underwriting or project management or raising capital, would you say that raising money is kind of what you gravitate towards as far as roles in, on the GP side?
Yeah. So I'm involved in all of it. I am blessed that I did have a very successful W-2, you know, IT/business career. I have a huge network here in Boston, which is an expensive market. So you have, you know, more people with disposable income. And I was in the finance and biotech industry. So, you know, again, super wealthy industries. So yeah, the ability to raise capital is certainly something that I have. And I built a lot of trust with those folks because they saw me managing large budgets and business plans, project plans, et cetera. So yeah, that's one of the things that I certainly can bring to the table.
Yeah, nice. And then as far as like company strategy moving forward, are there specific markets that you guys are targeting or asset classes? Can you speak to that a little bit about the strategy there?
Yeah. When I started off investing locally, it was all C-class. It was in a very blue-collar town next door to where I live. And there's a lot of headaches involved in that. You know, the tenant class is a bit lower. There's issues like, you know, they forgot their key, so they just kicked their door in. You're just not going to see that in a better tenant class, in a better neighborhood, right? They'll call you and you send a locksmith over and you know, it costs less than fixing a door.
Yeah.
Or you just hire a property management company to deal with all of it. So I've kind of graduated from that lower tenant class, lower sort of C-class property to more of a B or even A class in some cases, where it's just a much nicer property, better tenant class. And through COVID, that actually was very helpful because those people can all work from home and on Zoom. So we didn't really have any issues there either.
Right. Yeah. And then as far as markets, geographically, is it, where do you guys like to be right now?
I'm a huge fan of Tampa, although it's getting super expensive, very difficult to find deals there. I've liked Atlanta. We've got a few there. Again, it's also getting difficult. So for me, the North, being from the Northeast, I like the Southeast because Northeast doesn't cash flow very well. Southeast is a quick ride. So most of the major cities are direct flights with, you know, can be there within a couple of hours.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Texas awesome. Is amazing. It just takes me like, you know, a full day.
Right.
You can't just do that in a day trip. You have to stay overnight. And so it's just a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So I want to talk about your coaching a little bit. I mean, you've been at this for a while. You've got a ton of experience, some successful exits, and I know that you're getting into coaching there. So can you talk a little bit about that and the types of clients you like to work with as far as coaching?
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, I had hired a coach. And then at some point, you know, after I did a few deals, and I certainly saw the huge value in having a coach, but after I did a few and you know, I was more experienced, maybe a year and a half in, he was basically blowing up and had too many people asking to be coached. And so he just sent a couple of them my way and he said, hey, you know, these people literally have done nothing yet, right? They haven't even bought that first duplex or anything, but they want to skip that step and go right to multifamily. And, you know, in the first, I'm like, well, who am I? Like, I've only done this for a year and I only own so many properties, but he convinced me that, you know, I would be of value to them. And I took it on and it was fantastic. I learned a bunch, made some great relationships with folks. And then after a while, I started to coach, you know, sort of on my own. People would just reach out to me, wanted to learn what I've learned and do what I do. And so most of the coaching that I'm doing is with people that want to get into sponsor position, right, as a general partner. I also have people that'll connect with me and they say, you know, I just want to be a passive investor, but I don't know enough and I'm nervous and you know, whatever that is. I'll spend an hour or 2 hours with them. And that's more like, here's a look under the covers of how we as sponsors look at deals, how a general partner looks at a deal. Why do they split the equity, you know, 70-30 or 80-20? Why do they do a preferred return? What are the two or three things that can really go sideways on a deal and how do we evaluate those and try to account for those in our underwriting? So it's just giving them that look under the hood again, so that they can ask better questions. And I'll literally, you know, line it up for them and say, you know, here's the five questions you probably should be asking, and here's the sort of responses you should be getting. And those responses should come with a good deal of confidence, right? It should just be kind of boom. They give you the answer. They're not hemming and hawing about it. You know, they're telling you all the details, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So that's, you know, those are kind of quick hit, you know, not necessarily coaching clients. It's, you know, it's one or two phone calls. But the coaching that I do with people that want to be general partners, to me, that, you know, that's kind of, you know, I'm always trying to figure out, you know, what's my next step? What do I want to do in life? How do I add value in the world in general? And that coaching to me is kind of like being a force multiplier. You know, I'll explain that. So when I left my job to do this full-time, and it's not full-time, I work like half-time, so I'm semi-retired in this business. I just have great people around me that do the things that I would have normally done on my own, but I've learned to leverage other folks. But now that I'm working less, I volunteer a lot more. Now that I'm making more money, I give a lot more money to charities, right? And I'm on the board of directors on a local charity organization. And so I'm doing a lot more for my community than I ever have. And my outlook on life is more positive, and, you know, all these things that are just better. And so if I'm showing other people how to reach that financial freedom, or how to, you know, be a general partner in multifamily, and they're able to do the same thing, and perhaps they're able to then help other people as well, that's where I see it as a force multiplier. It's like there's more and more people in the world doing better. And even if it's just the passive investors that I'm helping, if they're feeling wealthier because their investments are doing better, they can sleep better at night because they're diversified, then hopefully they're able to give more to charity or spend more time doing the things that they love.
Yeah, I love that. That's so awesome. So I want to circle back just real quick on what you said about passive investors and, you know, just helping people get started, get the ball rolling. And you mentioned maybe one to five questions that they might ask a sponsor. Could you give an example of maybe one or two or even three of those questions that would help kind of get a person, you know, to get more clarity about a sponsor and a deal and just get it started in general?
Yeah. So a huge part of this is understanding who the sponsor is and whether or not you jive with them. Do they have the same morals or ethics or whatever?
Sure.
So there's a lot to be done there in terms of, you know, you can look up their Facebook page, you can ask other people about them, right? So you got to get the references and really get to know them. That's hugely important. I do talk about that a bit with people, but being the more on the analytical side, I'm like, okay, assuming you've done all of that, you've picked the right person and you've had, you know, a friend of yours gave you the reference, right? So assuming all of that, now what I want to talk about really, and these are the questions are, you know, your sponsor is going to assume he can raise rents to X, right? The whole idea is I'm buying the property that's been mismanaged and the rents are at $1,200 a month for a two bedroom and I'm trying to push it to $1,350. Those numbers may sound crazy depending on which market you're in, but just as an example. So the question is, well, how do you know you can get to $1,350? Very simple question. And if they're like, well, the broker told me. Oh, you mean the broker who
not a good answer
sold you the property, right? The guy who's trying to get you to buy the property is going to tell you anything.
Right.
Right. Not to disparage brokers. But if the person says, you know, we did comps and we walked, you know, the five properties that are nearby and they're all properties of the same caliber. They were built around the same time period. They all have pools, you know, and they start telling you specifically about some of these properties and what they saw when they walked the property. You know, when they start talking in that way, you know, they did their homework. And same thing about the market, right? So why this market? Why this submarket? Is this a good neighborhood within, you know, Atlanta or San Antonio or whatever? And again, just ask a simple question and be quiet. And let them ponder that. And again, hopefully the question comes is answered very quickly and has a bit of detail behind it and the level of confidence, right? I love this submarket because this is the path of progress. This is what's going on in this submarket today. This is where the higher priced homes are, you know, whatever the answer is.
It's that time of the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Steve, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
So I'm not going to answer that with a specific deal. It just came to mind. I'm thinking the best is always the first. And whether that was the first duplex that I bought, because I'm a micromanager and I was, you know, very much into the details and I couldn't let go and trust other people. So I had to buy it myself and manage it myself. But had I not done that deal, I never would have gotten to the point where I invested passively with others, because I wouldn't have learned enough about it to feel comfortable with it. And then that first passive deal is what led me eventually to say, I want to be a sponsor. So, you know, whether it was that first passive investment and just trusting somebody else to do everything, or that first time when I actually allowed other, you know, friends and family to invest alongside with me, I think the first deal is the best deal.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what advice would you give to people who haven't done their first deal yet?
That's where I spend like half of my coaching time.
You know? Okay.
Half of it is about the real estate, half of it's about mindset.
Sure.
Literally just you have to move eventually, right? So let's make sure you understand everything. Let's make sure you're educated and all of that. But at some point, you have to move and you have to make a bet on whether it's on a property, on yourself, on a sponsor, right? Depending on what you're trying to do. But you're going to have to make that bet of, are there risks and rewards? Is that ratio where I want it to be? You know, if the rewards are there and the risk is relatively low because you've educated yourself, it's time to move. And yes, it's uncomfortable. And maybe you have to look at your position size, right? Maybe you don't make a $100,000 investment, or maybe the minimum is 50K, but even that seems too much in a deal where you're trying to go in as a passive investor. So ask the sponsor if they'll take 25, right? Just because they said the minimum is 50 doesn't mean they can't take 25. So, you know, see what you can do to dip your toes in the water, whatever's comfortable. But at some point, if you don't move, then all the education you've done is for nothing. And you're always going to have the same result that you've always had to date, right? You will stay in that W-2 job forever. You will be concerned about retiring early or ever retiring, et cetera.
Yeah, I love it. That is great advice. Steve, what would you say is the worst real estate deal that you've done?
Worst deal was I bought a 6-unit property. So this was the first time I ever took investors, and it was a couple family members. It was sort of my trial run of, okay, I know this area here in Boston. I've done a lot of twos and threes. I'll go buy a 6-unit and bring in a couple of investors and let me just run through the model and make sure it's good for me, you know, that I've got all my bases covered. But it was more of a C or lower C class property. I thought the neighborhood was moving quickly. Didn't really do the research that I needed to. I did enough to know that, yeah, it's going to move, but it moved much more slowly than I was expecting. And this was like, you know, 5-6 years ago. And there was a lot of hassle, a lot of headaches along the way. In the end, the property worked out really well. I could have done without the brain damage. And at the same time, like any bad deal, you know, I learned a ton from that. And that's where going into the larger buildings, the larger properties, I did some C-class properties, but it had to be the higher end of the C-class. It had to be in a property in an area that was heavily gentrifying, right? That was already at like the tipping point of like, it's already been 50% gentrified. Did we miss out on the early part of that wave? And could we have made a lot more money going into an area that's earlier in gentrification? Yes, but that's also more headache because the tenants around you, the buildings around you aren't quite there yet. And that's going to cause more hassle than it's worth.
Yeah, that makes sense. So from that 6-unit deal, what was the number one learning experience that you still kind of take with you today?
It's the learning morphs over time. So initially it was, you know, don't go into a gentrified area or an area that hasn't been at least 50% gentrified, right? Mm-hmm. Don't plan on it going in a year or two and expect it to maybe take 4 years, 5 years. And now that same learning is, you know, that's adding to what I've learned along the way, which is just don't do C-class properties. But that's just for me, right? It's not that C-class properties aren't the right properties. I think if you're younger, right, I'm 51. You know, I just don't have the patience for it at this point. And I also have, you know, fairly large investors coming in that are friends and family. And I just want to be super conservative. And again, I want to be able to sleep at night. But if you're a bit younger and it's you and a few friends, or you're just getting started and you at some point you're going to have to do a deal. If the numbers actually work and you've considered all the things that can go wrong with a C-class property, and that's all baked in there and the numbers are still working, by all means, go do the deal. You know, it's just not for me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Everybody's model is different. That makes sense. So Steve, we're almost out of time here, but one final question, where can others go to connect with you, whether that's investing in your deals or maybe working with you for coaching?
So the name of my company is Velocity Capital and the website is velocitycap.com.
Okay. Awesome. Well, again, thank you for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure chatting with you. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.